today, joined by Josh Eberly, NBA freelancer. Another analyst interview. Let's go balls deep.
I'm the type to get shit done. You the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Got something loud in the blunt, yeah. I don't say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny getting tan. Foreign women in the sun, yeah.
That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Got my brothers with me. Got my brothers with me. And my mama's healthy.
Welcome to the Balls Deep podcast brought to you by Fantasy Basketball International. I'm your host, Adam King at AdamKing91. On Twitter is where you can find me. At FBI Basketball is where you can find us as a collective. Another analyst interview today. Let's bring him in, joined by Josh. Now, is it Eberly or Eberly?
Eberly.
Eberly. Okay, Josh Eberly. NBA freelancer, so working, doing a bit of everything. As well as a full-time job, and we'll get into that. But first of all, Josh, thanks for squeezing me into your schedule and finding some time to come on the show.
Yeah, no worries. It sounded like a fun premise and was happy to do it.
Yeah, no, it's been good, well-received. Yeah, we did a series last year. I think I did about 20, maybe 20 interviews, and you're the 11th I'm recording with this year, so... still got a few more to come. So, no, look, there's plenty of interest. And with you, I mean, you're an example of I'm starting to broaden, I suppose, who I bring on the show. So initially it was fantasy sort of analysts and guys that I work with directly, but starting to reach out and broaden our horizons a little bit and get people who aren't necessarily as focused on fantasy but just more NBA in general, which you fit that bill, I think. And so for you, as you told me off air, you do have another full-time job. But in terms of the basketball side of things, how did that come about? Was that an interest from a young age or something you grew into?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of stories for people who are doing basketball part-time start in a similar place. I guess mine is a little bit different in that I liked basketball from a very young age. And where I am in Canada, that was at the time sort of not common. I live in a pretty big city in Canada, over a million people. But when I was growing up, hockey was the focus constantly. So yeah. Sports coverage in Canada, really only the last 15 years or so, have we started to get regular basketball coverage. Prior to that, it was all hockey. It was Blue Jays, you know, maybe some CFL and NFL football. But unless Vince Carter dunked in the early 2000s, you didn't get any basketball on the highlight shows. The games weren't played. So it's been interesting. I was a huge basketball fan really early. I started emailing, you know, editors at Slam and Sports Illustrated asking if I could help write for them since I was like 12 or 13, maybe, like a young kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of those editors were nice enough to email me back and point me in, you know, some better directions.
Yeah.
But after school, like I played basketball growing up. I did a journalism diploma and then a communications degree, found my way in with, you know, a bunch of various outlets, freelancing. Dime Magazine was the first full-time outlet to really give me a look and bring me on the books. And, you know, I did some TV stuff for Sportsnet for a little bit, some radio, eventually pivoted that into a podcast with the NBA and Hoop Magazine, did some stuff for their print mag, did their pod. Man, went through the Big Three for a bit, worked along like for Ice Cube, did his pod.
Oh, yeah.
Came back to the NBA, NBA Canada, Sporting News, all through there, like 50 different outlets contracted me for this and that. And I mean, I think that's the grind. You find you get in where you can get in, and you kind of figure things out. And over the last 20 years of being interested in this and 12 working in it, I've had a few full-time offers, and ultimately, I didn't feel fulfilled enough when I was doing this almost entirely full time. Like maybe if I wasn't remote, but I think the idea of working from home, working remote, and it was so temporary. Like I know some of the basketball projects I got to do, I was so excited, so passionate about. A lot of the stuff that I loved doing was really collaborative, working with other people. And then the next day there'd be another piece of content on the internet. It's all so quick and rapid and. I mean, there's been lots of good and lots of bad, and I'm going long on this question, but it's crazy how you come in and out of this field so many different ways.
It is, and I yeah, it's I've spoken to a few people, and I know in the fantasy space there were during COVID people were let go and made redundant and lost their jobs and that sort of thing. A lot of the people that were doing sort of basketball in general or fantasy more specifically lost their jobs and had to go elsewhere. And was that sort of something that you noticed in the more mainstream space of just basketball? Was that an issue during COVID?
Huge. I mean, even before COVID, and again, like at the time I'm working for, I think Hoop at this point, and I'm not full time, but like I'm getting close between freelance gigs and podcasts. My primary income is basketball. I don't know if I was doing my ed degree at the time, but most of my income was coming from basketball. I was pretty much basketball full time. And you could not, this is just before COVID, but like SI layoffs, ESPN layoffs, Yahoo layoffs, CBS layoffs. Like it was the tone of it was kind of going that way even before COVID. And then during COVID was just another wave. And like for me personally, like Hoop, after running their podcast for 3 years, the NBA's podcast for a few years, like they shuttered it during COVID and never came back after COVID. It was a really crazy time. And I think, you know, I don't want to say it was a dream killer, but it certainly was a roadblock for a lot of people.
Yeah. And I think that was, I know at that time I've never done this full time and probably never will, but there was a time when it was becoming more of a time commitment and maybe heading in that direction a little bit. And then, yeah, what happened during COVID to a lot of the people that I've collaborated with and worked with sort of steered me in the opposite direction of, hey, I don't think this is actually something I want to do full time, especially, as you said, working remotely is another challenge in itself. So I mean, you said you did journalism and so that, I guess you were sort of focused in moving into the media space, the journalism space, and then ended up heading into teaching. So you said you're a full-time teacher. So what was it, I guess, that, because it sounds like that was a decision made a little bit later, like it wasn't something you did straight out of college or out of high school or anything like that.
You know what, life is funny I'm sure like my story is pretty similar. Like, I don't think it's remarkable in any way, but it, you know, you have twists and turns and, you know, right out of journalism, I had job offers for Putrid Pay and just to give a time frame, I graduated my journalism diploma in 2012, immediately went into a communications degree at the university here in Calgary. Cause I didn't see the landscape had just changed so much. And I think that was when I came out of J school, it was really the end of like print was dying. It wasn't quite dead yet, but it was dying. People didn't know how to make money on the internet. I remember I didn't have a Twitter account until one of my professors at J school was like, you need to get a Twitter account, because he was a local reporter here in Calgary. He does a great job, but within like 4 days, I had more Twitter followers than him. And you know, like they're just, it was such a new space where like people who were in journalism didn't know how to use social media, didn't know how to promote themselves. You know, these media companies didn't know how to use the internet. All of us younger kids coming through were better with the tech, but didn't have the years of experience, the consistency. So it was a really just a weird time. When I got my communications degree, I actually got a job with a political party here in Alberta, a left-leaning party, but I worked more for the constituency and I did stuff like government speech writing, marketing, political strategy, and I was still doing NBA on the side at this time, and I was still really trying to work towards NBA full-time in this space. Like I was going to work, I was punching the clock, I was writing speeches. But as soon as I was off, I was trying to get back into the NBA world and make my way. And again, it was like, is it audio? Is it print? Is it online digital? Is it video? Like where is the sticking point? How can I monetize things? It was always a battle. And I actually got an offer to move to Nashville, which is not even an NBA market, but that was where the full-time job was. And at that time, I think the job offer was $43,000 US. Mm-hmm. 1 year, and as we were talking, all these layoffs are happening. My wife at the time, my girlfriend then, had just gotten an accounting job in Calgary that paid her like $75,000-$80,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sitting there and I, you know, I've been accepted to go back to school for education. I always thought maybe I'd be a teacher, or I can, you know, risk it all, go to Nashville on this 1 year contract, ask my girlfriend to leave with me, job that makes substantially less money. And it, and I just, I couldn't. And I thought, you know, I'm going to regret this. I'm going to regret this. I'm going to regret not taking this chance and moving to the States. And I never have. Like, I love teaching. I still love basketball. I love having it being this secondary space. Sometimes I wish I could do more with it than I am right now, but I've never regretted it because teaching is just an amazing, amazing career. And it's been very rewarding. Not always as fun, not always as carefree, but it's been really rewarding in a way where I found, like, sitting at home and typing wasn't sometimes.
And so teaching, you're working at a school, I assume, at a particular age that you prefer to teach?
Yeah. So I thought I would end up teaching high school, coaching some basketball. That felt just like a natural, easy intersect for me. But I got a practicum teaching grade 5 and 6 students here in Canada. So that's 11, 12 years old.
Yep.
And just fell in love with that age, man. Those kids, they still love school. They're excited to be there in the morning. Yep. They want to come. They want to participate. And that's just like a really awesome thing. And I think coming out of working for the government and doing a lot of stuff with politics where people are so jaded and everyone's opinion is set all the time, it was just like amazing to have these conversations with kids who are just starting to ask big questions about the world, but still wanted to participate and weren't pre-decided on everything. So I think it's an awesome age. And I've been really lucky to work with this group.
And so how long have you been teaching that age range for?
So about 5 years now.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, anyone who listens to this knows what I do outside of this, but I support autistic kids. So I work with autistic kids and their families and supporting them and running groups and training and workshops and all sorts of things. And so I go into schools quite a bit and support kids in the classroom and support teachers and that sort of thing. And for me, something I've noticed over the last even 5 years, and hence my question, is the shift from, I guess, that transition from sort of your year 6 into year 7, so going into high school where social expectations change and more independence, that sort of thing. I'm noticing here in Australia, I don't know if this is a global kind of thing, but even those kids in year 5 and 6 now are facing some of those social challenges and with phones and social media and all that sort of thing. I'm noticing that the mental health challenges and all of that sort of thing are more prominent. It's becoming younger where this is starting to impact kids. Is that something that you've sort of noticed that kids are a little bit more impacted by that?
Yeah. And I mean, it's been interesting. Like the group I just had last year was the group that was in grade 1 when COVID happened. So I think that added another factor where you had kids that, you know, by the end of grade 1 had been to lots of birthday parties and they'd been on little soccer teams and they'd been, you know, out and about and they'd started to develop some resilience, and that just didn't happen for a lot of kids at a young age. And I think there are, you know, serious, I don't want to say consequences, but changes that occur because of that. Mm. And then I think, you know, my first child is coming in August, so I'm not an expert parent, and I think parents have become more and more dependent on technology to help occupy children. And with that comes overexposure to things they wouldn't normally have seen, comes anxiety. I had a kid the year after COVID when we were online, and he messaged me and I thought he wanted to talk about assignments, get extra help. And he wanted to talk. He was 11 years old and he was worried he would never get a job because there are no jobs because of COVID anymore. And it's just, you know, there is something to that. I also think we live in a climate, at least in Canada, where, you know, an awful lot of people, if they want to go get a diagnosis, they're just given it. which is good and bad. I mean, people need to get access to healthcare and help and options. Mm. But I also feel like a lot of the time parents are like, oh, well, my kid's struggling in some capacity. It must be something more. And with that becomes lessened expectations. And again, I'm going to say the word apathy again, where like they're just doing what they're doing because that's who they are. And I think we've looked maybe even on a global front, and this is my kind of experiences on socials, like people would often rather sit in a space where they are entitled to feel poorly about their lives, however unjust their situations might be, and they might be terribly unjust, then start to make concrete steps to change it. And I think, again, it's some of the isolation and anxiety that we are now seeing with, like, you know, you and I are having this conversation, we've never met, people being able to do so much from home alone. And I don't know. There's a lot of factors.
Yeah. Oh, there is. And COVID, I mean, part of my role here is that we run a national autism sort of, not helpline, but information service. So we get calls from autistic people, but family members and all sorts of things. And we get well over 1,000 a month, like inquiries, family, whoever it is calling us. And we're certainly seeing, as you said, a shift to that. Isolation became more accepted, I suppose. Like people were, as you said, they were just at home and they were by themselves. And it's had a flow-on effect even now to kids, to adults. Anyway, I mean, that's a whole other discussion, but I was just interested to hear your
To that point too, I have two cousins, 2 years and 4 years younger than me, who are both on the spectrum. My aunt was a psychologist, and through her, when I was going through university, I did like a big brother program for kids who at the time were diagnosed with Asperger's and autism. Asperger's no longer a diagnosis, but and it was always about getting the kids out, take them to the wave pool, take them to a movie, take them bowling, take them for dinner, work on social experiences. That was always the goal. And then you think about like what happened the 5-6 years after that, and it was like all of that practice and work and routine to hopefully help them be more independent and more capable in social situations on their own was essentially put aside for what happened with the world.
It was. We're seeing now the challenges of these kids, as you said, that were 4 or 5 or 6 during that time. They're now 10, 11, and they weren't exposed like kids usually are, because, as you said, usually you get your kids out there, get them active, get them participating, joining in. They weren't challenged as much because they simply couldn't be. And so they're now struggling. And it's a very interesting sort of time, I think, to be working in that space, whether it's me more specifically or you a little bit general, but you'd be working with kids on the spectrum, I'm sure, in classes. And So anyway, I mean, that took up longer than I thought it would, but that's good. So away from work as a teacher and your basketball work, and so you've mentioned, so you're recently married in the last few years, it sounds like. And first kid, very close. You said due in August. That's not long at all. It'll be probably by the time this is released.
We'll
see. But I guess what is that like how have you been preparing for that, and how will that impact, I guess, your because not having kids you can sort of it's about you and your wife, and that's life, but there's going to be a third person there.
It's a lot to think about, and I think you don't know what you don't know. And we did go long the last part, but kids education and basketball, I could talk for hours. So, but I think, you know, something about my generation too is people change careers more. Mm-hmm. People are more focused on hobbies and pets maybe than kids. Like in my group of friends, I'm 32. I'll be the second of my core group of 8 or 9 friends to have kids. Like it's really in everyone's kind of, but you know, I come home from work, you know, obviously my wife and I have plans sometimes, but I'll still watch basketball every night. I'll still play video games. I'll still read. I got into collecting basketball cards during COVID. Like, there's like so many things where, you know, I had a friend who was telling me, who's a bit older than me, I played beer league basketball with. He's like, once you have kids, you can still have a hobby, but you can no longer have hobbies. So I think that's something to think about. Just like, where is the time, all these things that you like to do, like what are the ones that are really important to you? And what are the ones that you can let go for, you know, the more important aspects of family? And that's something on my mind for sure.
Yeah. And I think you find, and you will, and your friends will find this as well, that hobbies, that's true. So once your kids sort of become your hobby and take up a lot of your time, you can still have a hobby, but they come back around. So like once your kids hit certain ages and milestones and things like that, there is a time when you can go, oh, I've actually got some time now to do things, because the kids don't need you there 24/7. And my kids are now 17 and 14. So pretty self-sufficient. Like I have to, as I said before the show, I had to take my daughter to the bus so she could go to school, and I have to pick her up from the bus. But afternoons, like she's often over at her boyfriend's house, or he's here, but she's in her room watching TV, or so there are, I do find times when I'm just sitting there going, what am I going to do? Because and 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I wouldn't have had that problem because I had hobbies. So you need to rediscover yourself a little bit. And for me, golf will be one of those, I'm hoping, in the near future, is starting to play a bit more golf again. It's something that I did with my friends pretty regularly when I was early 20s. And so for you, I guess, is there, because I mean, basketball is a hobby, or pays, which it is, same for me. But so that one, I guess, like, do you envisage that you may have to scale that back a little bit, or would it be, would you take time from other things and try to maintain that?
I mean, I guess we'll have to figure out things as we go, to be honest with you. I don't know where or when the time will come and what will end up being sacrificed, but like I would say about 4 years ago, so when we were coming out of COVID, a lot of the regular things I did for writing, as a regular contributor, as a writer, started to dry up during COVID. And a lot of those opportunities never came back. And then audio, and then, you know, I found new venues, and social audio became a thing for a couple of years with like Clubhouse and Locker Room and all of these affiliates. And then through there, I got a job with Spotify for a bit. And, you know, the nice thing about there was it was so flexible, like watch a game, do a live game, talk about the game. So hopefully, you know, one of the beautiful things about, you know, working in basketball and touching that space is that it is often been flexible, and it's you know, find the time when you can find the time. So hopefully there's still always ways that I can be involved in doing something, but will I be able to do as much promotion and regular appearance stuff as I do now? Probably not. No.
Yeah. And so I guess leading on to then, we normally finish up these discussions with talking about things that I enjoy and seeing whether you do, but one, movies, TV shows. Like I really enjoy watching movies and TV shows, and having kids and young kids, that is one that may take a hit because you'll be tired and you just won't have that time to go, hey, I've got 2.5 hours now to sit down and watch a movie. Are movies, TV shows, is that something you enjoy doing in your free time with or without your wife? Because my wife has zero interest in movies and TV shows, so it's often something I'm doing by myself or with a friend. Is it something you do together?
I love movies almost as much as basketball, and my wife loves movies and TV too. So that's definitely something we definitely do that together. And I mean, we'll have to figure it out as it comes too. But it's just one of those things where like it's just a different stage of life, and I'm excited for it. But yeah, I'm aware. I was thinking about movies specifically because TV you can rip off 40 minutes.
Yeah,
especially when babies are young, they sleep every 2 hours, whatever, right? But knock on wood.
Yes.
but like movies, you know, some of these 3-hour movies, like when are you going to get 3 hours uninterrupted? I don't know. So we'll see.
Yeah, and any sort of, I mean, it's a hard question and one that I can't answer, but any favorite movies that stand out, any like a particular genre of movie that you enjoy more than others?
Yeah, so a few years ago when I was doing the Hoop podcast, Jabari Davis was my co-host. After COVID, we had our own podcast with Blue Wire, and I started ranking every movie I watched on a spreadsheet. Okay. So I've got like 1300 movies on there now or something.
Okay.
And Jerry Maguire is one of my all-time favorites.
Yep.
Hell or High Water is one of my all-time favorites. I would say like a modern Western, something like that might be my thriller Western, something like some sort of crossover there would probably be my favorite genre.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Jerry Maguire. That's I mean, there'd be people probably watching this or listening along that don't know what Jerry Maguire is or who it is. Cause it's, I want to say it was a 90s movie.
I think it's
late 90s,
97, 98.
Yeah.
And it lost the Oscar. It was nominated alongside Fargo and they both lost to The English Patient, which is a very miserable, boring movie. That
it is a very miserable, boring movie.
Yeah.
96, Jerry Maguire 96, was. I just looked up. Yeah. 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 Cuba Gooding won. I remember he won best supporting actor. That is a sports movies. Do you like sports movies being sort of working in that space? Is that something you're drawn to or it was more Jerry Maguire was.
Yeah. I mean, like, movie. You know, and it's been poo-pooed a lot, right? Like that's not the life of a sports agent and it's not very real, but if you watch Jerry Maguire, when he writes his manuscript in the beginning, and like I like to think I'm a very reflective person. Like when I have a terrible day, or when my boss gives me some criticisms, earned or not, I take that really to heart. I internalize things. I go home and reflect. When Jerry Maguire in that movie, he goes home and he's had a bad week, and things are starting to, you know, mount up, and he thinks about like all the problems in the profession and all the things that could be better. That really resonated for me my whole life. Like, you know, the system, everyone complains about the system or like their job or their life. And like how many people take the time to vocalize that, not even try to change it, just like to vocalize that out loud in the hope that maybe there's some community, some culture, some people see things eye to eye. And that just that moment in that movie really resonated for me. And it's fantastic for a lot of reasons, but I just at its core, like it was a guy who was in a profession serving other people who thought, you know, the profession had lost its way.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether that's journalism or teaching or politics, I think that's been very relatable for me my whole life.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting take on it. Music. Is that a thing for you? I just sat down with Drew Dinkmeyer earlier and he is not a music person. So we not something that he really resonates with at all. Is that something for you or it's more movies and TV?
It's definitely like, I mean, again, there's only so much time to say. So like basketball and movies and TV is definitely over it, but like lesson planning and writing are similar in that, like, it's awesome to have music on and I listen to everything. Like I'm equally likely to throw on hip hop or country.
Yeah.
So it, you know, but there's not, I wouldn't say music is like a driving force for me.
No. Okay. And then last one is food. Favorite foods. Typically for people, it's either something they grew up with and they just go, oh, yeah, it's my grandma's lasagna or it's a specific. Or is there a cuisine or something that you've sort of grown to like as you've become older?
You know, there's lots of things. Like I'm where I am, beef is huge, like lots of ranching. So steak is a big deal. Beef dip for me, a beef dip sandwich is unmatched. I like Italian. My wife and I went to Italy a couple years ago and did the food scene for 10 days in Italy and just unbelievable. So pasta,
What is beef dip? That's not something I've heard of.
Oh, okay. So it's like sliced beef on a French loaf and you dip it into like meat drippings and has like sometimes onions, horseradish, various things on it.
Yeah.
Like the Philly cheesesteak is kind of comparable, similar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And I hadn't even talked about holidays. You said you went to Italy a few years ago and somewhere that's somewhere I've been a couple of times. I love Italy. Is that a highlight? Like, is that somewhere you went that sort of sticks with you and you'd like to revisit there at some point?
Yeah. Like, it's interesting. Like my mom, was a flight attendant, but I didn't like flying as a kid. It made me anxious and I got motion sickness.
Yeah.
Flying anywhere was sort of like a big stressor for me. Italy was incredible. Like, the food was incredible. I don't know if I would do as many tours as I did last time. If I went again, I would spend more time by the ocean, more time eating, less time walking around, seeing stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's definitely one. And then I would say, like, I've been to 8 or 9 NBA arenas at this point, 8 or 9 NBA cities, because obviously it's a huge passion for me. And if I'm going as a fan and not in a media capacity, hands down, my favorite venue or city would be Portland, I think.
Okay.
The food, beer, aura of Portland is awesome. Every time I go there, I meet people, have a great time, eat well, try some great drinks. You know, the Blazers, you know, I got to watch them as a fan, had several beers at that point, and they were down 3-0 to Golden State in 2019, the year the Raptors won.
Okay.
And I want to say Kevin Durant and Andre Iguodala were out, or KD was definitely out, and it was like, okay, this is Portland's chance.
Yeah.
At least get one in the series. And Myers Leonard had like 39 points, but Damian Lillard couldn't do it. And but again, like, it was just incredible. Portland is always a great time. So
yeah, actually, my friend, he was over there, I think it was last year, and he went to Portland. So I haven't been to Portland, but he went there, and he loved Portland as well, which is interesting. Like, it's not a, if you spoke to, I guess, your common person on the street, and or where would you want to go in America, or your favorite place, you think of, oh, LA,
of course,
New York, not Portland. But he loved it. And I think he said the music scene, because he's very into music as well. I know you're not as into music.
Yeah.
He really found that the music scene there was quite good. Like, he got wrapped up in it there as well. So
I think, like, the, you know, it's interesting. That's part of why I mentioned it, because I don't think people think of Portland.
Mm.
Like, the Pacific Northwest is really cool. Like, the weather's cool. The landscape's cool. There's like mountains and forest and, but yeah, like the people there, it's like a really like cultural hotspot. There's lots happening. There's lots of shows. There's lots of like sports fans, music fans, so many small businesses. It's not as, I don't know, mainstream as some of those other cities. And I'm not like a big crowds person.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in a huge city. I'm a city boy, but like, I'm in the most spaced out city in North America, I believe.
Yeah. Okay.
So like, I'm not trying to do like Europe the first time. The crowds in Europe for me was like, wow, this is crazy. There's a lot of people who live here, you know.
yeah no, we went to, I mean, said we've been to Europe a couple of times, and we love we like Holland. I mean, my wife's family is there, but it's a big place, and Amsterdam, and her family's just out of Amsterdam, but it's quite spaced out, and it's easy to get around. It doesn't feel claustrophobic, closed in, whereas Paris, a lot to do, but we don't like it because it's just so busy.
I've heard that a lot.
Yeah, it was like the things to do, the Eiffel Tower, all of the things that you would do when you go there are great. But we took the kids there, and just lining up to get up the Eiffel Tower is a 3-hour line. Like, it just, and it's, there's just people everywhere. There's no space. And I'm much the same. I don't like that. So I prefer, when we went over last year, we went to New Orleans, and it was good. We enjoyed it. The food was great. People were nice. So everything was good, but it was hot. It was sticky. There were people everywhere. And then we went to Boston, and then we went to Indiana.
Mm.
And Indiana, complete opposite. No one anywhere. It's just miles and miles of just walking, dead flat, no one around you. And that, we really enjoyed that, because there wasn't as much to do, but you didn't feel the pressures of just thousands of people surrounding you at the same time. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I would say Florida is my probably caveat, because I do love Disney World. Disney World is insane. It's a ton of fun. Yeah. And I actually like the hot, humid vibe. Maybe it's because, like, I'm in a really dry, often cold climate. So the hot, humid opposite's fun for me. But yeah, no, it's interesting. I think generally, like, some of the more less thought of NBA venues have been my more preferred. Like, I enjoyed Denver as well.
Yep.
A lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, obviously, that's, everyone likes different things, and that's that's life. We're all different. So, I'm going to let you jump out. Thanks for coming on the show. For anyone wanting to check out your content, audio, written, whatever it is, where can they find you and sort of what's on the radar, I guess, now? We're in a bit of a dead spot in terms of NBA with Summer League just wrapping up. But what is on the horizon for you?
Well, definitely on X, not Twitter, X, at Josh Eberle. Everything I do, I usually share out there. All my socials are the same. But, we have the Olympics in Canada.
We do.
I don't think anyone's beaten Team USA, but Canada got a good shot to medal. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I'm excited. I've actually got next week off work. And my wife's about to go away for a couple of months. So part of it is getting into a routine with the kids and that sort of thing. But the Olympics being on. So what are the time, because it's in Paris. I mean, we know that. What are the times for you? So for us, like, I know the Boomers, our basketball team, play Spain and I think we actually play you in our second game. We play Canada. And for us, the games are on here at 7 p.m. prime time, perfect
viewing time.
What is it for you?
I'm not sure. I have to double check the times. I know that we're the last game of the day against Greece.
Okay. So
I don't know, 8, it said. So maybe like, I don't know. I have to check what it is. But it's often in Europe, it's like middle of the night. So
yeah, okay.
We'll have to figure it out. But definitely excited for this team. I think our countries are in similar spots where we're excited about a lot of young and up-and-coming talent. And, you know.
Yeah.
I think people are getting their hopes up a little too much watching USA mess around in these preliminary games, because that's not how they'll play when it matters and the A team is here. But I think there's a lot of talent in the world, and I have come to love international basketball so much more the last 10 years, just getting a sense of like how many great players there really are. And you don't always get to see it. Like a guy like Dyson Daniels, who I think is a really good player, doesn't get to show that in the NBA because only so many guys can be featured in the NBA.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of great players that you don't get to see do the things they get to do in international ball.
Yeah, and I think, as you said, we are in similar position. I think both Australia and Canada would have visions of getting a medal. But our pool, as we've sort of said, it has Greece, it has Spain, who are both also hoping to win a medal. So I think it's going to be a really hard pool round of games. Canada are sort of one of those teams that we looked at. And they should be better because they've got a lot of good players, but now they've finally just got them all together playing
well,
on the same team.
I wish they did. I mean, they have a lot of them, but like it's very I don't know how to even compare, and it's pretty niche. But Andrew Wiggins in Canada, like for those who don't know, his nickname in high school was Maple Jordan. This is a guy who, since he's 14 years old, Canada really believed he was like LeBron. He was going to be the next guy. He's obviously not that, but he's a very good player when he's focused and he has size. And Canada's biggest weakness is they don't have size. They have a lot of good perimeter players. They don't have any fours or fives who are substantial bruisers or incredibly skilled. And they really needed Wiggins, and whatever's been going on with him personally, I don't think we know all of those details.
No.
Injuries the last 2 years and the Warriors telling him he couldn't come is a huge blow. Zach Edey. Now with the Grizzlies, he's got to take care of him and his money. And I do understand, like, you have a chance to have generational wealth. You don't want to risk it in the Olympics, but it's heartbreaking because, you know, that might've been the starting 4 and 5 for Canada if they played well in camp, and neither of them are going to be there. Benedict Mathurin and Shaedon Sharpe too, you know, dealing with injuries, not quite ready, but I mean, there's a lot of guys there, SGA, Murray, Barrett, like this is a good team, but I think that the team that Canada could field in 2028 would be their best team ever
if
go to plan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll see. Probably that's a bit of an issue for Australia as well, I feel like, coming in, is that we just don't have the big bodies to match it with some of those, well, the US to some degree, but the Europeans, they have a lot of big bodies in there as well, and we have Jock Landale and
yeah,
Duop Reef kind of thing, who can spread the floor but can't bang.
Jock and Kelly Olynyk got some compare. They're relatable, and like yeah. Kelly's been the hero of Canada basketball the last 15 years. He really has. He always says yes. He always balls out.
Yeah,
you know, he's had some terrific 40-point showings where the team had nothing else, and you know, he's going to be asked to do a lot. Dwight Powell's going to be asked to do a lot.
Yeah,
but yeah, in international basketball, when you don't have to get the heck out of the key, and you have some of these big Europeans who are 7 foot, 300 pounds, just hitting you in there.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a different game, and the guys like Prime Andre Drummond, you know, are a lot more effective, I think, in FIBA basketball than they are maybe in NBA. And yeah, neither Canada or Australia's got that guy. So
no.
And of course Giannis is in that group. So we'll see.
I don't know. The fact that Australia opted to go without Matisse Thybulle is
a big choice.
It was, met with some disdain, let's say, here in Australia, because we love Dele, he's barely going to play.
Yeah.
Matisse Thybulle, you just throw him on Giannis and you throw him on Shea or on Jamal Murray. Like, he's just, that's what he is, an elite defender. And, it was an interesting decision and not a favorable one, but we'll see. Maybe it works. I'm not sure. But anyway,
I'm glad we stuck this in though. I was really excited to talk some Olympic basketball. I'm glad we snuck it in.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited. As I said, that I've taken that week off work to watch it.
And you're releasing this mid late August, so we might know who wins the gold medal by the time this comes out. That'll be funny.
Yeah, I think we will probably. Obviously working in this space, you learn to like NBA players and US players, but I would like to see anyone but the US win it.
Yes, always.
Yeah. It's
Americans don't understand this. Americans don't. They're like, why are you rooting against us? I'm like, you are the empire. LeBron is Darth Vader, man. Like, you guys are the bad guys. Everyone else in the world wants to see you fall. They're like, why? I'm like, what do you mean, why?
It's obvious to us.
Yeah. If Canada can't win, anyone but USA for sure. Yeah.
And I do think, I mean, there's a number of teams that could. Germany, France, Spain, Serbia.
I think France, Australia, Canada. We'll see, but I think France will disappoint. I think France will be very disappointed.
Based on what we've seen, they haven't been great in the lead up.
Don't have the guard play, I don't think.
No, Evan Fournier is not who you need. As we've seen in the NBA, he's basically out of the league now. So, they will challenge, but it'd be fun to watch Wemby. He's full of highlights, so it'll be good to watch him play. But anyway, as I said 10 minutes ago, I'm going to let you go. I do have to start work, so I need to go and get ready and make a coffee. Thanks again for jumping on and finding some time, and good luck with the new edition. Which is coming very quickly. Enjoy that. It's certainly life changing, but I'm sure you'll enjoy it. For those watching along, like, subscribe, thumbs up, head to our Discord server. Leagues are open already if you're a fantasy player, fantasy manager. We have a ton of leagues open for people already. And by the time this is released, we'll have even more open. So we'd love it if you could jump in there and join our leagues. We'll be back with another analyst interview at some point in the very near future. Until next time, catch up.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.